and welcome to another episode of the Generosity Freaks Show. I'm your host, Brady Josephson, and today we have the pleasure of chatting with Olga Adrienko. She's the head of global marketing at SEMrush, an online visibility and marketing analytics software. We happen to use it and we happen to recommend it. It's pretty great. She has developed a lot of the social media and community built up around SEMrush. She actually started in social media for them. So we talk about how she got her job. It's kind of a fun story. And then we talk about social media and some tips on how organizations can use it better, particularly around listening and how to use it to develop great content. Then we talk about search engine optimization or SEO. And some of the trends and some of the things that they're finding. And she again provides some tips for organizations on how they can better use SEO as part of their strategy to drive more traffic. And then I ask her what it's like to manage 13 teams in 50 countries. Not because it really relates to generosity. I just think it's fascinating. How do you do that in so many different languages and cultures? And then we end with a short question and discussion around generosity. And Olga gives a really great answer about gratitude. So that comes at the end. I'll leave that for a little teaser for you. So big thanks for Olga for joining. It was pretty late at night for her in Russia. So we appreciate her joining and sharing some of her time and expertise with us. And I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks, as always, for listening.
Welcome to the freak show, here we go. It's just another freak show, here we go. I said welcome to the freak show, here we go. It's just another freak show, here we go. Welcome to the freak show, here we go. It's just another freak show, here we go. Welcome to the freak show, here we go. It's just another freak show, here we go.
Hi, Olga. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
I appreciate you staying up at night to make the time zones work for this interview. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's 24/7 for me. And it's definitely not normal hours. So that's fine.
Well, that's one of the things that I actually want to talk about is what is it like to do global marketing in over 50 countries? But we'll get there. And you've got all kinds of different, you know, digital marketing experience in the work that you do at SEMrush. I'd just love to know, how did you end up at SEMrush and get into this world of digital marketing?
So I was working for a bus company that would be similar somehow to Greyhound Bus, but it was in a Baltic state. So it was Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. So I was there as a regional sales manager and then transitioned to marketing. And when I transitioned to marketing, the world of SEO really scared me, but social media really sounded friendly and I started discovering more. And then I actually left the company, but still had like and continued learning about social. And then I enrolled in a whole social media marketing summit of like the month of webinars. And I thought that I'll take a break for a while. So I was watching this really nice webinar by Ian Cleary, and he was sharing a lot of marketing tools that social media marketers should use to succeed. And he said, and then he transitions to the new tool. And he said, well, guys, this is not that exactly social media, but you can type in the domain of your competitors and then check the keywords they're ranking for. And then that's where you kind of get the ideas for content or for hashtags or whatnot. And then I was amazed at the tool, the tools like this exist. So I paused the webinar and I went to the tool, and the tool was SEMrush. And I started typing in my previous competitors from bus company, and I was overwhelmed by the information. And then I looked at the logo, and I realized I've seen it somewhere. And I realized it was a recruitment website. And so I thought that whatever job they have open, and I was in St. Petersburg, Russia at the time. And I thought that whatever they have, I will apply for it because I believed in the product so much. And I wanted to work there. And I opened the page and they have social media marketing manager, which completely just matched what I was just learning. So I sent them a message like, guys, you're so awesome. I want to work for you. I just discovered the tool in the webinar. And I go to the interview 2 weeks later. And a week later, I'm a part of a team. So basically, I had only 2 weeks of rest between the jobs. And I initially planned for a lot more. That was just, a great opportunity and then out of the blue. And since then, I always believe that this is where I should have ended up.
That's cool.
That's how I joined.
That's awesome. So you started on the social side. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about social media, which is, I mean, we could spend hours and hours talking about social media, but so you oversaw all the social media for SEM Rush for a number of years. And you said social was maybe more accessible than SEO, but like, what do you love about social media as when it comes to digital marketing?
Direct communication, I think, I don't like sales because sales is just pushy and direct. So it's outbound. What I like about social media is that you still have a conversation and you can still proceed, but then the decision is made by the person you were talking to. So this is still a direct communication, but in a lot subtler way. And once I actually made a sale, so first sale that I've done was I started. And I wasn't hired for sales, I started discovering the tools for social media, and then I just offered a barter deal. So I offered the tool to use SEM Rush, and then so I could use them, and then they ended up buying API units for a lot of $1,000. So that was within my 3 months in the company. And then I started listening. So I type in SEM Rush on Twitter, and I hated Twitter before that, but I just learned that Twitter search is super easy, and I was a pro at advanced filters. So I started searching for people who already talk about us. And that's where I started the conversation. So I think that a lot of companies, even if they don't have the budgets for, social media marketing managers to really build this whole thread of nice posts and filter and then publish valuable information, what they can definitely do is they can tune in the discussions that happen already. And that actually can be done by the business owner or just the director of a company because they are most knowledgeable. In our case, I wasn't knowledgeable about SEO at all. So I had two jobs when I joined. I had the job of doing social media for SEM Rush, and that means that I'm a professional on social media, PR, content, and whatever. But I also had to be, I needed to be an SEO because...
Right.
People were asking us questions about SEO. So I was reading tons, every day until 3 a.m. I was just reading every article that I could possibly read. So I was really engaged, and that also helped, I guess. But my team was in Finland at an expo in Helsinki. And I see this tweet which is better, SEM Rush search metrics. And so I check who tweeted that. And this is just a random person from Helsinki. So what I do, I just say, if you are in Helsinki now, you go to this expo, my team will meet you and we'll do a demo.
Cool.
And then actually the guy went there, and then he is the client until this day. So for 6 years. Yes. So these stories don't happen every day from social media, but by tapping in, by just looking at people, searching for people who already are mentioning the brand or mentioning maybe the competitors, you have to be a bit ethical there, but still just joining the discussion, really valuable, sharing valuable information, or if there is a direct question about your tool, then not being shy and then offering help or introduction or walkthrough definitely really helped us also to take clients from social.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, even just in the short time we've been talking, you research and listen and search and, you know, like that's where I think the huge value of social actually is there's people talking and communicating all day long about the things that they're interested in and the things that they're passionate about and the questions that they have. And it's such a rich source of data for us as marketers to try to better understand customers. And yet the number one question that always happens or always gets asked to us, at least in socials, how many times should I post? Or, yeah. You know, it's all about distribution or communicating at. And no one ever asks the question of like, how do I better understand or how do I listen, you know? And so maybe as we get more sophisticated with social, that will switch. But it just seems like that's such a huge opportunity is to like listen and better understand, right?
Yeah, that's true. But there's, well, a lot of companies do not understand that there are two jobs. There's social media marketing manager, and that's the specialist that posts and they take care of the threads. They take care of conversions, maybe, or they also do paid ads. And then there's a community manager. And oftentimes, both jobs are expected from one person. But community manager is someone who is, the strengths are absolutely different. So they are good with people. They're able to talk. They're able to listen. They're able to search for relevant information. They're relevant discussions to tap into. And then they're not necessarily, they can really be bad at posting. But they should be just good at making sure that within like 280 characters or whatever, depending on the social media that they're using, they fit the value into the message, and they also make the audience feel that the brand cares about them. So I really believe that two jobs don't really. You cannot find the person, you rarely can find a person that would combine these two roles.
Right. No, that's a really good point. I mean, people may not have the opportunity to hire two, but even just knowing that, you know, you're probably going to have to lean one way or the other, right? Do you want this person to be more of the social media marketer or maybe more of the community manager, but expecting them to be excellent at both is really hard, right? That's a really good point. You know, one of the talks that I've seen that you do is talking really about, you know, using social to drive conversions, which I think is really interesting. Cause a lot of times it's like, yeah, social is great for engagement and conversations and the soft stuff, but you know, it's not so great at driving actions. What are some of the kind of key things or key secrets or, you know, key things to note about using social to actually drive conversions and not just have, you know, fun conversations?
Well, the key is really to not target everyone. If you target narrow audience, then you're able to convert them more. And I think social really works in terms of building thought leadership. So that's what we did. And how I also approach this, so a lot of new people discovered about us through social because of our weekly Twitter chat. It's been going for 5.5 years now, with the exception of Christmas week, and that's it. That's also, I think, something that we've done really well. That applied to my own strengths. So I thought that, okay, when I talk, you can hear that I'm not a native speaker. When I write, you cannot understand that I'm not a native speaker. And then now I know a lot about SEO. I'm comfortable when I do the panel discussions and conferences, but I wasn't like this 6 years ago. And so I needed a bit of time, like a bit of a gap between what I write and what I
write.
And then so I couldn't really moderate the discussion. So I need a bit of prep. And then the text was really my strong side compared to the video and interview. So I thought that Twitter was really a great platform for us because there was a lot of chatter in the SEO community there. So I just, and then I thought that I apply my strengths and also tap into the social media that everybody seems to be using. And then we started the chat. So I researched the topics and I took a really easiest way. So I didn't even check our tool, which would have been also a smart my way to do it. But anyway, so I just checked the top conferences, like all SEO advertising conferences there. I took every title of the presentation. I just rephrased it somehow. And that was my chat topic. So I like it. That's a no-brainer because I knew that top conferences care about the trending topics and then the most popular ones.
And the titles are key. Yeah, exactly.
So that's what I did. And I also, and then I started inviting people. How I invited people, I think, also that was, well, the tools for that are easy. Some are even free. So I exported all of our Twitter audience. If I had a chat about SEO, then I would filter in Excel. I would filter the bios by keyword SEO or search. And then I invited personally all people in that were following us in that chat. And then they started being active, and then they just spread the word. So I built a community that were easily sharing our content. We were sharing theirs during the chat. So I have a rule that we retweet like crazy, because that's the hour where our audience gets all the attention of our wider audience. And I think, and then a lot of people just started being interested in the tool, because we covered all the topics that we could provide the solutions for. So that's where they just, a lot of people just started messaging us that, guys, we're considering, like, we're interested in the tool, just because we were exposing ourselves to a really targeted audience based on the, small audience that I handpicked.
Oh, that's such a good example of, you know, how to build community, be targeted, you know, do research, create something of value that people will care about. But I think a lot of people who use social, I think part of the thing is they go, oh, it's so easy, right? Anyone can send a post or, right? So it's easy. But, you know, just even hearing that of, no, if you really want to harness the power and build community, it's work, you know, search, export, personally invite, you know, do it over 5 years every week. You know, like those are the things that you have to do to actually kind of extract the value. So that's a really great kind of case study. Any kind of like quick tips or suggestions maybe for nonprofits listening of kind of things that you see brands do wrong, maybe on social, or something that you've seen brands do really well that maybe nonprofits could use?
I think there are numerous ways for nonprofits to, to use social. Maybe, so a lot of people who are passionate about some topic, they share the posts online with the hashtags, or they just, actually finding the influencers that would be passionate about their topic and about, the charity that they have, or, about the organization, so there are small communities that have a handful of really huge influencers, and influencers become influencers because they want to share the next new thing, or they really have a voice, and then they're not looking for, most of the time, like they're not doing it for money, but they're doing it for a greater cause. So aligning your nonprofit with these influencers, and then finding the ones that resonate with you, and then your the problem that you're trying to solve resonates with them. I think social is a great way to do that. And also really look at micro influences. So we always I always work with micro influences more than with gods, as we call it, because micro influences, they do have time for your brand. They do, because they're growing their brand, they want also the support, or they want to share something meaningful. And they just invest support others easier. So the tip would be search for relevant influencers. Don't really search for someone who would have 50,000 followers. They're not gonna notice your direct message. But then someone who have 5K or 10K followers, they will be seeing your message, and then they will be replying quite likely. And also maybe building a thought leadership on social media. And then if a director of a nonprofit has the time, then it's great if they can go and then have chats, because that's the way that the account will be building thought leadership. And also it's maybe great for someone who would want to donate. If they see this company as a front runner, as someone who is really driving this whole force, then they're likely to notice that. So that's also one thing. And also forming the community. So whoever is already donating, who's already involved in the venture, then creating a private Facebook group or creating the open community, and then or maybe having a, well, creating a WhatsApp group, or you can, well, there are numerous of things depending on what information you have about people and what, where the audience is hanging out. So I would say that harnessing the community that already is engaged, that looks social, is great for that. And it's free. So that's amazing.
Yeah. No, I love, that's a great point on like the micro influencer. I think that's a step that a lot of nonprofits could really tap into. There's really passionate people about certain causes that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10,000 followers that would love to get behind a campaign and use that influence. But everyone always is like, goes for Justin Bieber and whoever. It's like, no chance, just like no chance. And there is huge potential there. So that's really interesting. So thank you for that. I'm sure we could talk and pick your brain all day long on social, but let's move on to some SEO. I can't talk to someone from SEM Rush and not talk about, you know, SEO. So maybe for more casual kind of digital marketers and SEO folks, or people who hear SEO and just like, oh my gosh, I don't know, I don't want to talk about it. What is a trend that you see happening, or kind of like what's going on in 2020 that, you know, people need to be aware of, around SEO, and kind of where is it headed? Or how are people finding websites today differently than even just 5 years ago?
So we continue analyzing the traffic sources, so where the websites get traffic from. And right now, over 50% of traffic comes from organic search. So that means that Google now is a primary driver of traffic, and that puts companies in an interesting position. So unless they invest in search, then they really lose or have to spend enormous budgets on ads. And I would say that content is a great solution to that. So most of the companies, if you look at the websites, they always, if you open any homepage, then they will be saying like what we offer, like that's me. I think what companies really need to have is the solutions to problems, maybe some FAQ pages, or maybe you know the questions that the audience is asking already. And this is a great way to start, because nobody's interested in your company. They're interested in the solutions to their problems. Or in case of nonprofits, then they probably are searching for the ways to help. So they're bothered about, for example, maybe something about nature, about ecology, right? So then they will be searching for like, how can I help plant a tree, or how can I, what can I do basically to save the planet? And this is nothing about a certain nonprofit, but this is actually a person who is already interested and then probably is ready to donate. And I think that uncovering those questions that people are asking on the stage where they are already willing to help, but not necessarily knowing about your brand or not your company. That's the content that you need to cover. This is the questions that you need to answer. And then, so if you pick this questions that tend to be long, so it should be like 6, 7 or more words, because with the long tail keywords, that's what they call, so it's a lower search volume and then longer keyword, So with those, you have less competition. Mm-hmm. And if you publish relevant content, and then really honestly try to help the user without selling or without encouraging them to donate completely upfront, then I would say that they will still they will not leave the website, and they will unlikely to know more, and then they will at least get to know your brand or your logo, and then next time they will think that they want to enroll or engage in some nonprofit venture, then they will be searching for your brand already. So I would say that content solving problems is the key.
Yeah. And I'll have a follow-up question there in a bit, but just want to reiterate, you know, when we do analysis of nonprofit websites and we do benchmarking studies or whatever, the biggest problem that we see facing nonprofits is just a lack of volume. You know, like their conversion rates aren't necessarily bad. Yeah. You know, when they ask people to give, it's not necessarily bad. It's just they have 1,000 people and they need 10,000, you know, or they have 5,000 and they need 50,000. And the reason why they're not getting that is, one, there's a level of sophistication and, you know, SEO and optimization. But the biggest thing is they're not producing content, like, period. You know, they have newsletters perhaps, or they have PDF documents, but it's not the type of content that's actually useful for people who are searching. And so if someone's kind of saying, you know, I have some content in print materials, or, you know, we speak at events, like, people are producing content. It's just not, you know, living on the website, or they want to move towards this idea of how do we answer people's questions with content. What are some of the first steps maybe that they can do? Can they use SEMrush to actually figure out what questions people are asking so that they can tie their content to it?
Yeah. So we have a tool called Keyword Magic Tool, and it's a gigantic vocabulary of almost 20 billion keywords. And so every nonprofit has topics that they cover, right? So the core topics. So if you type in the short topic in the Keyword Magic Tool, then we'll give you all of the questions people are actually asking in Google for this topic. Mm-hmm. And then you can filter that by search volume, by number of words, and then further down the grouping. We'll help you narrow down these questions as much as possible. And then you pick them. And basically what I suggest is that, if every nonprofit has engaged audience, and there should be someone there, maybe there's a retired journalist, or maybe there's just someone who's passionate about writing. It's always worth asking in the community, guys, who can help us build the content. And then what should happen when you have the list of those questions and those topics, then there should be someone knowledgeable in the company, or you might ask a thought leader to help you answer these questions. The easiest way is to ask them, record the audio message, or record the short interview, and then ask someone who can transform this into text. So I would ask the expert, the strongest expert, you know, on this topic, and then I would ask someone else to transform it. That's the next steps, I would say.
That's great. That's a wonderful idea. You know, we use recording and translation all the time to move like webinars or presentations into eBooks, and that's how we do our research studies. Is we'll prepare a PowerPoint presentation and we'll just record it for an hour and a half, and then we get it transcribed. And we find it's a lot easier instead of like writing, you know, so many pages, and then the tone comes across a lot better too. It's more conversational, and then you can tweak it on writing. But I hadn't thought about that for just, you know, content creation, of saying, what's the question? Go to an expert, whoever it might be, get their answer, record it, translate it. That's a great idea. Thank you. I'm going to steal that one. same thing. SEO is its own, you know, huge topic, but any kind of like maybe final tips for someone who's just interested in going deeper in SEO, or again, common things you see people do wrong, or people, quick tips for them to do for SEO.
Well, I see that technical SEO is a really huge part where people, most of the companies fail, because it's just technically advanced and difficult. Still, I would recommend running a site audit of your website and understanding the core issues and maybe asking some webmaster to fix, or well, definitely every website has someone, well, someone works on your website. So maybe also understand, helping them understand the issues that they should fix. Google will crawl and understand your website better. That definitely works. And then when we analyzed the biggest losers of the Google updates. In terms of technical SEO issues, the website that have technical SEO issues in whatever industry, if the update happens, then they go down. And then also thin content, meaning maybe, well, just irrelevant content, outdated content. Everything around that. Also now, well, website security. Definitely depending on niche, but yeah, that matters. And then page speed, also something that your website needs to go fast. So what actually happens in a lot of ways, and then if I was in a previous job, I was uploading pictures to the website, I actually didn't really care or check the size of the images. That was that was like 2010, which was fine back then. But so now, if you upload the image that is 2 megabytes, then it, and then if you have tens or hundreds of images on a website, that's gonna significantly lower load speed. So I recommend, I cannot now remember off the top of my head the tool that can compresses the images, but definitely make sure that if you upload the images, then videos for that matter, then you compress them and do not necessarily unnecessarily increase load speed.
Yeah, no, that's a great tip. And I know you know, I used to have my own blog, and then we do a lot of content marketing, and it's, you know, by the time you finally write this blog post and you finally get it ready to publish, you're just like, please, I just want to click publish and move on with my life. It is absolutely worth the extra 7 minutes to compress the image, tag it properly, you know, do like the three things, because you will not go back and do it. And to go back like 2 years later and try to figure out all this stuff that's wrong, there's no way you ever do it, you know? That's so take the extra like 5-10 minutes right now to do those types of things, because if you don't do it now, you're not going to do it later. Or if you do have to do it later, it's a massive project. It's super annoying. So that's great. I want to be respectful of your time. At some point, I'm sure you have to sleep. I'll ask one question before I'll end with the kind of generosity question. But I saw that you kind of lead a team and you work in over 50 countries. I'm just curious, what is it like and how difficult is it to kind of lead a team in different languages and different time zones all over the place? So what is it like? And two, what are some things that you found to kind of make it work or make it be successful? Because it sounds incredibly challenging.
It is challenging, well, for me as a manager, because it was, well, at one point I was leading 13 teams, and that's impossible for one person. In terms of different markets, for example, when we were entering Brazil, we entered that with just work with an agency, and we were using SEMrush as a data provider, analyzing all of the trends. For example, we were in Brazilian TV because we analyzed top celebrities by search volume, and the top celebrity that we identified actually has released the new clip the next day. So it just all tied in together. So we were trying to work with media more than with their audience, and that worked really well. We also were publishing content and doing webinars, and that in 2 years, roughly, we became the second tool after Google Analytics. So that was... Wow. Yeah, so that's completely different approach to what we've done with the US basically, or UK. And with Australia, that was really difficult because of time zones. Well, same with Brazil. Mm-hmm. And for example, with when we work with Turkey, it's a different market because the they cannot afford they consider $100 too expensive. And they also, the level of English and then our tool is not localized to Turkish. Mm. And so it really cuts down number of people who actually even can use the tool. And also because Google really understands English well, but they do not really understand other languages that well. Then updates and penalties and then all algorithms work really differently. And in markets, well, for example, Russia is the same, Poland. And then, a lot of countries, like non-English speaking countries, then they still practice some gray tactics and black hat because Google cannot really identify what's wrong with the language. And then
interesting.
So they're now like 3 years behind in some ways. I hope I don't offend anyone, but so they're just learning some of the stuff that definitely doesn't work in US or UK. And that's the difference because the educational content should be different, the tactics, right. And then the tools that they're going to use or that they need are different. Keyword research tactics are different. For example, in Israel, the experts were saying, okay, we just identify what competitors are doing better. We fix this for the client, and that works already. And then while in Germany, the expert was saying that, well, we don't do only this because this will not be enough. We need to do extra keyword research and ensure we do better than the competitors. So that's a difference in how advanced markets are. And then, the implementation, and then how data-driven they are. And then also, whether the tool is localized or not. So this is.
Yeah. Just, it sounds crazy. It sounds stressful. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, because you work for such a global stage, I'd be interested to know kind of your more global perspective of a question that we ask a lot of people come on the show, but how do you think we can grow, improve, and optimize generosity?
I think by one person at a time. I think it all comes from gratitude, and the first step to generosity is gratitude. And if people are happy where they are, then they are inclined to help others. So everybody helps from a happy place, and gratitude helps people to cherish or accept the life. At this very moment as they live it. So I think the first step is gratitude, and only one person at a time. I have my gratitude journals, and then whenever something happens, like a really small thing, when I easily find a parking place, for example, I just say thank you, and because this is just really small things, but big things and small things in a sense don't matter. They just add up or compound in your day. So I really encourage everyone to really kind of outline 5-7 things in their day that they're grateful for, and I think from that we have more happy people around, and generosity comes from happy.
I like that a lot. I wrote down one of those kind of quotes there about starting with gratitude. I think that's great. And even just adding, normally I do a list of kind of 6 things I'm going to do for the day, professionally, 2 personally. So now I'm going to add one more that's just like something I'm grateful for that day. So that's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing about social media and SEO and gratitude. This has been great. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
My accounts are on Olga Andrienko, OLGANDRIENKO, R-I-E-N-K-O. So it's Olga Andrienko, but with one A in the middle. And that's the same for Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. I'm active on all those accounts. Facebook is definitely, 99% business. Instagram also, I'm all open and happy to have the conversation. And yeah, regarding SEMrush, that's just semrush.com.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to send out those links as well. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
Hi again, this is Brady, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you'd like to listen to all future episodes or maybe go back and listen to some of our past episodes, you can do so by going to generosityfreakshow.com, or you can search The Generosity Freak Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, pretty much wherever you listen to your pods. And if you have any questions or a suggested guest, or maybe you yourself would like to come on the show, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us at podcast@nextafter.com. That's podcast@nextafter.com. And if you want to find out more about this vision to unleash the most generous generation in the history of the world and what we're doing at NextAfter in terms of research, resources, and training, you can find out more at nextafter.com. That's nextafter.com. Thank you very much for listening. And finally, I have to say thank you to Nathan Hill, our producer and mixologist. This would not be possible without him. So thank you, Nathan. And thank you once again for listening.